When I was 19, my father, who never kind of figured out how to say I love you until the day he died, but he did anyway, he wrote me this note, and close of the note said, "If you want to vent your spleen to the communist gutters of America, you'll do it without one red cent from me. Love, Dad." So I vented my spleen, and for many years, I vented that spleen to the communist gutters of America, and I ended up back in Baltimore venting that spleen. And the movement here in Baltimore was different than movements across the country in many ways. In most places around the 60s, you know, it was a student movement. They were out of campuses and holding signs against the war and like that. Baltimore was a working-class movement out of the street. It was a very different place, very different place. We started counter-institutions like the People's Free Medical Clinic, which is still on Guimon Avenue. We did that with the Panthers. Then there was the People's Free Garage. Everything was free. People's Free Garage. And the People's Free Garage is now actually Brentwood Auto on 41st Street. It's not free anymore. And we had a People's Free Grocery Store. But the food wasn't quite free, but it was like at cost. So we had all these counter-institutions, and we were organized to people, and we really believed the revolution was around the corner. I mean, we knew the revolution was coming. Capital was going to be overthrown. We were taking over. It was just coming. We all knew it was coming. We all lived in collectives in these working-class communities around Baltimore. I lived in the John Brown Collective. We lived right next to our women's collective. I think that was the Emma Golden Collective, if I remember right. But we lived in the John Brown Collective, and it was 5, 6 guys and 1 woman. And it was a real different. I mean, well, there was 1 Vietnam vet. There were 2 vets in the thing. There was a couple of street people, the O'Brien brothers, these massive Irish guys. They were big. And it was a very macho collective. We were all really into being tough, you know, and bar fights and drinking and writing poetry. And I'm a poet, I'm a lover, I'm a drinker, I'm a fighter. And we were into all this stuff. And in other collectives, you know, I mean, around the city, they were studying Marx and Lenin. And we studied Mario Puzo's The Godfather. We did. And that was the basis of our loyalty, serious loyalty. So one day we were at a conference in some place up way up north, and we heard that the United States had invaded Laos. Well, this is just not going to happen. Couldn't stand that. So we rushed back to Baltimore, knowing the revolution was around the corner, and said, we're going to do something to stop this invasion of Laos. And so we organized this demonstration downtown, in downtown Baltimore. This is 1971. And you have to remember that this is, as I said, this is a, Baltimore collections were very different all across the city, and they really were made up of street kids and young steel workers and Vietnam vets, and it was a very different kind of place. And so we went to the demonstration, and our signs were on 2x4s. And we had bags of rocks and helmets, and we're ready. And we had no permit. Of course we had no permit. And so the police charged the line, as the police do when these demonstrations have no permits to get out and nobody left. But when they charged this line, unlike students who would always run, everybody stood and turned their signs around. So this gladiator battle ensued in the middle of downtown Baltimore, right across from City Hall. I mean, it was a battle royal. And people weren't backing down, they were fighting, and I led this charge up Charles Street, and people were smashing windows, and jewelry stores and jewels were falling out on the ground, and I remember I picked up this pile of, I don't know what they were, diamonds and pearls, and I looked at this poor guy who was shaking, and said, "We don't want your jewels, we just want a revolution," and gave him back his jewels, and went running up the street. And so, you know, we just took on the city of Baltimore, but it got very serious. It got very, very serious because the police were very angry, and we were very angry, and we were battling in the streets, and one of the guys in our group was charged with this assault and battery, the intent to commit murder, attempted murder on a police officer. The cop was beating this woman on the ground pretty severely, and this guy came up behind him with a 2x4 and hit the cop in the back of the head, and he fell off, and he almost died, and actually arrested the wrong guy for it. And then I never got charged with this, but I thought I was going to be charged with this. I never understood why until later. I was running up the streets, and the cops were chasing me, and I went around this corner, and all of a sudden, this cop grabbed me by the back of the neck, and he swirled me around, And he had this nightclub up and had me by the throat, and he had his nightstick in his hand, and I took my construction helmet and hit him in the face with it. And he went down, blood everywhere, broke his nose. I went, oh, shit. And then I went off running and took off and was running down the alley, which was where the Greyhound bus station, the Maryland Historical Society were then. And there were two cop cars coming up either side of the alley with all these cops running down either side of the car. And I went, oh, God. So I tried to get over the fence and didn't make it over the fence. They pulled me down. They had me in handcuffs and my wrists and ankles and up on the ground. And see, the crook is coming to get me off the stage. And so they beat the shit out of me and took me and arrested me and put me on this bus. They had me on the bus, all these other people who were arrested, and two of the kids I was supposed to be getting straight from being gangsters in the street who were on the bus with me because I had brought them to demonstration. So I got fired from that job later. And so I'm on the bus, and the cop puts a gun to my head and said, shut up. And I went, well, fuck you. And so we went back and forth, and I knew he was really going to shoot me on the bus so that I could be as crazy as I wanted. But we got to jail, and they put me in a cell, and I remember I was laying face down on the bench, and they went running through, the cops were yelling, you know, we want to find that little guy, the one who was wearing that construction helmet, the guy with the mustache, find him, and find the tall guy. The tall guy was a guy named Gene who had, the next day in the paper, there's a picture in the paper, this headline said, anti-war demonstration, 26 police sent to the hospital, there's a picture of Gene kicking Major Schnabel in the balls, right in front of City Hall. I mean, it's a dead picture right in the center of the paper. So they were looking for Gene, they were looking for this other guy, the short one. Somehow they didn't ask me to stand up. So I was just kind of sitting there with the cop, don't ask me to stand up. And I went home and shaved my mustache off. And after I got out of jail 7 hours later, and my little girl, who was Chelsea, who was just a really little one then, she was like a year old, she kind of freaked when she saw me without any mustache. But then the things ensued, and so I'll make this very short because you just played your guitar, but we really thought the revolution was happening, and I got really excited at a meeting, and I went home and cleaned the guns I had, and apparently there was a informer in the house, and he smelled the gun cleaning fluid and told the police, and they were also after Gene. So that night at 4:30, they busted in the house. Dozens of cops just came streaming into John Brown. They poured poor Dave O'Brien off the toilet. He was trying to take his shit, and they just grabbed him off the toilet. Poor guy, out of the hall. He was, can I finish? No, he couldn't finish, and they dragged him away. And Gene Flanagan, of course, he was put in chains, and they threw him in the back of a U-Haul van, and they drove off. And they left one of the cops behind, and this poor guy was stuck between the third floor and the second floor. He had found a shortwave radio on the top floor, and he knew we were getting our instructions from Havana. And so he was on the top floor, and he got really frightened. He pulled out his gun, and he said, I just want to leave. But we're not going to do anything. Go, please. We're not going to do a thing to you. And he left, so we had a meeting with our lawyer, Harold Buckman, who was a great old communist lawyer in town in those days, a wonderful guy. He was just a lovely human being. Fought the UAC hearings and stuff like that. So everybody except for Gene decided to have a trial together. And Gene went to jail for 6 months, and everybody got off. And we thought there was a brilliant job done by the lawyer and that the people looked at us as their children and let us free and all that kind of stuff. And I never could figure out how we really got off, and I never could figure out why I was never charged with assault and battery with intent to commit mayhem on a police officer because of the fighting we did that day. And it was years later, 20 years later, I lived in this John Brown house. It was a serious collective. We tried to create a new world, live a different way. And I was sitting there one day, and my mother had this love affair with this cop. And I saw him one day. He was in his 70s. And he said, Mark, I want to tell you a story. And he said, remember when you were arrested that one time? I mean, I was arrested all the time, stupid. When you were arrested that one time? And he said, your father took your mother, came to me, and said, we have to get the evidence out of there. So my father, who disowned me, loved me so deeply, so passionately, even though he never uttered the words, I love you, that he got the evidence away from the police that freed me and everybody else. Nobody knew 2 years later. Now, I've never told that story because other people have heard this story, but I wouldn't tell it a lot because until my parents died, because it wouldn't be fair to them. And the cop is dead too. But what it taught me was the real meaning of my home and what a home really means and what love really means and what it means to be a father. And I ended the 17 years of my dad's life being his best friend, and he was mine. And that's my tale tonight.